He was just another resident at first. A clean-shaven man in silk pyjamas and a waffle-weave cashmere robe. They all looked the same, the other patients at Scoria Vale, as though money incubated within them naturally, like a virus, and released from their pores. Cleanliness and comfort perfumed their sweat and atomized into their personal stratospheres. The patients of Scoria Vale, they were dewy with it. He was easy to notice. Tall and broad, brutish, even in a wheelchair, with a nose and jawline hewn from a tree. Handsome, but oversized. I assumed from his body that he, too, was an athlete. Hockey or discus or some other big man sport. He was always reading. A book or sheaf of papers fanning from a folder. A pen held between his teeth. I don't remember the first time we made eye contact, though we must have exchanged a greeting or two. There were only 30 or so of us at a time. But we didn't speak at all until he graduated from the wheelchair to the cane. I had a cane too, which I resented and relied on constantly. It was a slow recovery to get there, months in traction, my leg up in a series of pulleys and supports, a catheter holding me in place, until an X-ray finally proved that leg and hip were back in functional alignment, and I was given the cane. This was early still, when I thought that the worst thing that would ever happen to me was being unable to run. Mine was hospital-issue steel and rubber. His was made of carved wood so delicate that it looked like it would snap under his weight. "Is that for show?" I asked one day when he passed by, hobbling down the paved path toward the rose garden with a pink newspaper tucked under his arm. He paused.
"The newspaper?"
"Your delicate cane, eh?" I said. "It's a real twig. Shame. Couldn't they give you something lecker?" Shame, a catch-all word for displeasure, lecker, meaning good or better, my Johannesburg words, now long gone.
"It's plenty strong," he said, looking me squarely in the eye.
He sounded American. "You're a big guy," I shrugged. "It's not stylish, but the hospital one is safer." I raised my cane and handed it to him. He took it, gave it a hard lean, and nodded.
"You're the girl who fell," he said suddenly. "The athlete."
It took a moment to recognize myself in that description. "Yes," I agreed. "I'm the girl who fell."
"Something happened. Hip dysplasia?"
"No, dogs and babies have that, not women." "I'm sorry, painkillers," he explained. "I'm not at my best."
"Me neither. I'm on them too."
I tapped my bandages. Then I pointed to his right leg, encased in a complicated brace. "Bad break?"
"The leg is healed. It's the knee. I have to walk on it. It's awful," he admitted, grimacing. "Makes me want to quit."
"You can't quit your own body," I said automatically, the rote recitation of an athletic mantra.
"Don't I know it?"
"Hockey?" I asked.
"What?"
"Your sport." He had a very brief look of shock before answering.
"I'm in business. I'll go back to it."
"Oh," I said, realizing. I tapped the bench. "Chair. A game, not a sport." After a beat, his eyes brightened.
"Yes. Chair. Cher," he punned.
French for expensive, rubbing his fingers together. I sang a few bars of Cher, if I could turn back time, until he laughed.
"You're quick."
I raised my eyebrows. "I'm the fastest woman on earth."
"I'm Ferdinand,"
he introduced himself, holding out his hand.
"Call me Finn."
I shook it. "I'm Caroline Muller," I said.
"Don't call me Muller. I'll take off running. Then we'll both be in trouble."
It was supposed to be funny, a joke, but he looked sad.